Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. Have your say now. Text or WhatsApp Kildare Today on 0833 97 97 97.
KFM. And you can contact us on 0458 98 999, or indeed email us at studio@kfmradio.com. Now, researchers from the University of Birmingham think there is evidence that regular bad dreams could be an early warning sign for developing the condition called Parkinson's. The early research suggests that experiencing those bad dreams and nightmares could be the early sign of the disease. Let's find out more. I'm quite fascinated by this. Previously, we've had a couple of people on from the University of Birmingham, which I have to say I've become very impressed by the amount of research work they do. The lead author of this research joins us now. He's Dr. Abidemi Otaiku. And good morning to you, Dr. Otaiku.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. And previously, we've had a couple of your colleagues on the programme about various research that you've done on other topics as well there. Now, Parkinson's disease, I suppose, if you might describe to listeners, what are we talking about first?
So Parkinson's disease is a brain disease that tends to affect people who are in late life, although it can happen to younger people, but it tends to happen maybe around age 60 and above. And it's a disease that causes primarily problems with movement, so shaking, stiffness, slowness, but it does cause other symptoms that are not based on movement.
Yeah, I'm kind of familiar with the symptoms of it, and I've often been intrigued by it because my late father-in-law had it, and I suppose there's not many families who haven't had some experience of it, whatever. How early, you're saying that it can affect primarily older people, but can also even impact younger people. How young?
There are some cases of people who are in their mid-20s having Parkinson's. However, this is extremely rare. The majority of cases will be diagnosed probably between ages of 60 and above, and maybe a small proportion will be aged under 50, but that's probably about 1 in 10. So it's mainly a disease that affects older people, the middle age, very rarely in young people.
You talk often about early symptoms being shaking, stiffness, difficulty with balance and coordination. It also progresses beyond that, does it not?
Yes. So we consider the main symptoms, so the three you mentioned, to be the motor symptoms, so movement-related symptoms. But then, in the past 20 years or so, we've had a bigger understanding that Parkinson's disease causes non-motor symptoms, so non-movement symptoms. And these are quite broad and quite surprising to many people. So these can include things to do with mood, so feeling low mood or anxious. It could be due to sleep, so feeling sleepy during the daytime, or bad dreams, as my study shows. And even things like constipation, sweating. So it affects the whole nervous system. And some of the symptoms you might not think are neurological. But when you think about the brain controls all our body, it starts to make a bit more sense why Parkinson's can affect so many body systems.
And is there a gender bias in it? And what I mean by that, obviously, is are men more predisposed to it than women, or is it equal to both?
So, it seems that men are slightly more likely to get Parkinson's. So, the figures people normally quote is that out of every 10 cases, most likely 6 will be men. So, a slight bias towards men, but not extreme. But there is a clear bias towards men.
Give me a profile, then, of those you studied and what you were looking for.
So, I used a database which included approximately 4,000 older men who were aged 67 and above from the United States of America, and they took part in a study which lasted for about 12 years, and every year they came back to answer questions about their health. So have they been diagnosed with certain diseases? And in this particular study, I looked at Parkinson's disease. At the beginning, they answered questions about sleep, including bad dreams. So my main aim was to investigate whether the frequency of bad dreams or nightmares at the start of the study would be related to how likely they would be diagnosed with Parkinson's disease by the end of the study.
What aspect, or why were you drawn to that particular aspect, that there might be something going on here of a link between Parkinson's, the onset of Parkinson's, and bad dreams and nightmares?
I'd say there are two reasons that are related. So the first one is that recent studies have shown that people with Parkinson's disease tend to experience nightmares more frequently than the general population. So we tend to think that between 2 and 5% of adults experience nightmares every week. But in Parkinson's patients, it's quite a lot more. So some studies say about 17%, some say 20%, some say 25%, some say higher. So we know that Parkinson's patients, even from the time of diagnosis, tend to have more nightmares. And right. Then in terms of...
Go ahead.
So, and then we now know that with Parkinson's disease, by the time somebody is diagnosed, they would have already lost... they would have already had a significant amount of changes in their brain. So the movement symptoms tend to start relatively late in the actual process of the disease.
Right, it's already there before
it's
we
already,
have
already there.
Before we have the visual manifestation of
yep.
it. Or
yep.
that would be for the person who doesn't have it, the visual manifestation. But for mm-hmm. even for the person themselves, before they start mm-hmm. to experience the kind of symptoms you talked about, it would already be active in the brain. Is that fair?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay. Now, and by the way, do we need to tell everybody out there now that just because you might have nightmares, maybe even on a weekly basis, doesn't necessarily mean that you would have Parkinson's or be getting it?
Yes, that is very important to remember. And firstly, the study is the first to find this connection. And the findings was very robust. It just seemed to be very strong. However, medical research, before we say something is a fact, we need to have several studies over time that come to the same conclusion. So this is still quite early evidence.
Now,
but even in my...
Yes, sorry, go ahead.
But even in the study which I conducted, there were 400 men out of the 4,000 men who had bad dreams or nightmares every week. And of those 400 men, only 16 got Parkinson's during the 12-year period.
Right.
So it's very rare. So even within those who had weekly nightmares...
Right, so
96%, it might be
an indicative aspect, but it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody who has the nightmares gets it. I want to talk to you about... Electroencephalography. I hope I got that right. And yeah. You plan to use that now. Obviously, you're going to be exploring brain activity.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you intend? What do you think that will tell you?
So we want to know what changes are happening in the brain that cause dreams to change. So for a long time, doctors, scientists, we didn't really think dreams had much significance. We thought perhaps they were random misfirings, and they didn't really show us anything about the health of our brain. So a number of studies do show that actually dreams do have meaning in a biological sense. So certain parts of the brain can help you control emotions when you're awake. And we now know that those parts of the brain also help with emotion control during sleep. So the main aim would be to look at which parts of the brain are showing changes in Parkinson's patients, and that might help us to think about how best to treat patients with bad dreams and Parkinson's, and maybe even to start to think about what's the underlying cause of the disease. But the primary aspect is to treat patients.
Now, Dr. Otaiko, I want to put a particularly Irish question to you. Have you ever heard of a link between dancing and dealing with the symptoms of Parkinson's?
It is something which I have heard about, but I don't have very much experience. But I'd be happy for you to...
Yeah, we have actually, I recall, done a couple of interviews on this programme. There is an Irish type of native dance called set dancing. It's like mm-hmm. the French would call it a quadrille, dancing in groups of four or eight. And it has been used, and we've spoken to medical people like yourself here in this country who say, yes, there, when it comes to this type of set dancing, because there is a movement freeze that affects Parkinson's people. Is that correct?
Movement tends to be slower.
Yes, movement. And that the rhythm of the music and the dance helps people to, you know, put one foot in front of the other. I'll look it up maybe and I'll email the relevant stuff that we had ourselves in regards to it. I have a question from a listener here who says, what is the current treatment, if any, for people who have Parkinson's?
So with Parkinson's disease, the main treatments are what we call symptomatic. So these are to control the symptoms rather than to cure the disease. And these tend to be based on dopamine. So dopamine is a molecule in the brain that helps to control movements, which tends to decrease over time in Parkinson's. So the primary treatments are based on replacing dopamine via medications.
And can it give people a quality of life back that is acceptable?
For many people, it does have very strong effects. So there are cases where people can have several years without having significant impacts on their life. But Parkinson's disease does vary quite significantly from person to person. But the treatments we have are quite good for compared to many other diseases of the same type.
I note that there are 145,000 people, it is estimated, currently diagnosed with Parkinson's in your own jurisdiction, the UK. I'm not sure, I don't have the numbers to hand of here in Ireland. How widespread a condition is it, do you think, Dr. Otaiku? And is it becoming more prevalent, or is that to do that we just have a better awareness of it?
So it is relatively common in older people. So we say that about 1% of people aged 65 and above have Parkinson's disease. Sometimes the number slightly higher, sometimes slightly lower. But around 1% of those who are 65 and above have Parkinson's. So it's relatively rare, but it's something which many people will have experience of with regards to family or friends or friends of friends.
Right.
And in terms of how common it is, it does seem to be getting more common. Part of that is due to the society becoming older. But there does seem to be evidence that it's becoming slightly more common for other reasons too. But those are still not fully clear.
Right, interesting. And we certainly have a greater awareness of it than we would have had. I wouldn't have known what Parkinson's was 20 years ago. And most people mightn't have. There's an expression here in Ireland of somebody being described as being dithery, meaning a little bit shaky and in and out and stuff like that. I don't know if you've ever heard that term.
But I haven't.
In the past, that is possibly in the way that because we were not familiar with conditions like Parkinson's and we would be seeing the symptoms in other people, we might describe them as, he's a bit dithery or she's a bit dithery or whatever else. Whereas, in fact, now that the condition is becoming more recognisable, I've just got the number for Ireland. We have 12,000, it's estimated, people here in the country who are diagnosed with Parkinson's and 145,000 in your own jurisdiction. So you will carry on your research now with the same group or with a new cohort?
So these are some secrets. So some of them might be with the same cohort, but I'm starting to look for other cohorts because the main limitation of the one which I had was that it was only men and they were only 65 and above. So a lot of medical research in the past has focused primarily on men. But of course, as we said earlier, whilst men are slightly more likely to be affected, women do get affected too. So I'd like to look for cohorts with women to see whether the results would be the same.
All right, and we look forward to you, Dr. Otaiku, of speaking to you again. It's quite fascinating what your research is indicating from the University of Birmingham, that there is evidence that regular bad dreams could be an early warning for developing the condition. If you're having those bad dreams or nightmares on a regular basis, weekly. But of course, it doesn't 100% mean that you'll get Parkinson's either. And the lead author of that research at Birmingham University Centre for Human Brain Health, Dr. Abademi Otaiku, thank you for joining us on Kildare Today this morning, Dr. Otaiku, and have a lovely weekend.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right. Quite fascinating, folks, isn't it, in regards to that? And I have to say, we've had about three or four different interviews with people from the University of Birmingham, and they've all been really, really evocative in terms of the research. Right. Now you have it. Oh, yeah, and Owen, you gave me some numbers or you have some details of, if anybody's concerned about this, there is a Parkinson's Association in this country.
Yeah, there is, and there's a helpline as well that is available on their website, and that number is 1800 359 359. So the Parkinson's Association of Ireland, 1800 359 359.
Now, Owen, that's a free phone number, of course. Also, Owen, we had a query about what treatments are available for Parkinson's, or to whether there is a cure currently or not.
Yeah, and that was also off the Parkinson's website, that there's no cure for Parkinson's currently. As Dr. Ataiku mentioned, there are, however, been significant improvements in the treatment of the symptoms of Parkinson's in the last 20 years. Those treatments include drug therapy, surgery, physiotherapy, speech and language therapy, and also occupational therapy.
Now, the drug therapy, of course, dopamine, which is a chemical in the brain, Dr. Ataiku mentioned how that's treated. But there's also other research being carried out.
Yeah, it's been carried out into the causes of Parkinson's and into developing new treatments for the disease. The ultimate goal of the research is to slow down progression or even cure Parkinson's altogether. As the research advances, there are likely to be better treatments available over time, which will improve the quality of life of people with Parkinson's.
And of course, anybody out there, whether you have it or not, and but you might know somebody or a family member, or you might be wondering about them. And when I use the term dithery, I did not use it in any disrespectful way or whatever. I've just said, for example, that over the decades in this country, because we weren't familiar with particular medical conditions, we would tend to apply terms like, oh, someone is dithery. Maybe it was Parkinson's. Maybe it was some other medical reason. We always described somebody as odd. Oh, he's very odd, she's very odd. But it could have been a person suffering from depression or some mental illness. We tended to put these societal labels on people because we didn't understand the disease. Thankfully, we're coming again to more understanding. Again, Owen, that number, if anybody wants to contact the Parkinson's Association, or indeed get onto their website, where you can request a copy of their exercise wall chart, which has been devised by a physiotherapist specifically for Parkinson's disease. That number again, Owen, for their helpline.
1800 359 359.
Well done, Owen. Always on the ball, I have to say. Good man.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
I'll get to your messages in just a minute, and we'll also be joined shortly by a fuel retailer on how much tax are service stations paying on the average litre of fuel. But Owen, a very, very sad situation up around the Leixlip Confey area of the last couple of nights, and one of your guests there, Councillor Joe Neville, I saw the photos that he put up yesterday evening, but you're also joined by a Selbridge listener.
Yeah, because a substantial number of fish were found dead in the River Rye in the Confey area over the last couple of days, and what appears to be a pollution issue. And of course, Joe Neville did put up some photographs, but as did Dylan O'Flynn. He's a resident in the Selbridge Leixlip area, and he's on the line now. Dylan, good morning.
Morning. Good morning.
You were taking a walk, I suppose, along the River Rye, and you noticed a couple of fish floating along the water. Perhaps, you know, you might see one or two from time to time, but this was a substantial number, and obviously something kind of raised alarm bells.
Yeah, definitely. So it was actually brought to my attention by the Leixlip Angling Club. So we do a lot of fly fishing in the area, and they're very good at overall looking at the river quality and making sure that, you know, the environment around is, you know, up to scratch. But it started coming out around 9:30 the other day, where there was just an abundance of fish just floating on top of the river. So I went down myself to check it out, and it was absolutely incredible to see. Like, there was hundreds of dead fish floating in the river, and it's something I've never seen before, really. And it's only kind of, it's reminiscent of what you'd be seeing in the River Talco, you know, in 2014, when there was that huge spill which was killing thousands of fish. But, it was incredible.
Well, does anyone know what the cause may have been? I saw on Twitter people saying pollution, maybe a sewage spill. Have you got any updates or anything on that?
So that was essentially all we can hear from the councillors and other TDs like Rita, is that it was a sewage leak of some sort, but there is no sewage waste treatment plant which is directly discharging into the Talca. So we're thinking that maybe it's some sort of pipe which is blocked up, but we're not sure because it's all hearsay more so, because it might be a different underlying issue which we haven't addressed yet.
And I noted on your Twitter that you're an environmental chemist with a passion for water quality as well. I'm sure you're aware that that particular area was a nursery for trout and salmon, I think, as well, and a spawning area, so very important for biodiversity.
Yeah, definitely. In my line of research, I'm looking at pharmaceutical pollution inside of rivers, so how that affects the aquatic organisms. And we're also, other people in my lab who are looking at pesticides and other chemicals like PFAS. And we're seeing now that as we're learning more about the toxic implications of these chemicals, you know, there's such a wide variety of a cocktail that can actually affect these aquatic organisms. In this case, we don't know if it's just there's eutrophication, so like, you know, they're essentially suffocating from phytoplankton or from the loss of oxygen in the water due to phytoplankton, or if it's from chemicals. So we really need to, you know, figure this out and fast, because if it is chemicals, then it'd be going directly into the Liffey, and obviously then there's a greater implication for the for trout downstream.
Yeah, and obviously it goes without saying that people who are out walking with their dogs, or even, you know, children, if it was a sunny day, don't at the moment go near the River Rye until there's a thorough investigation carried out. I know Joe Neville is on the line, Fine Gael councillor, Cathaoirleach of the Selbridge Leakslip MD. Good morning, Joe.
Morning, Owen. How are you?
I'm not too bad. You're a resident in the area as well. You were doing some work on this. You were getting in touch with Kildare County Council and the EPA. What can you tell us?
Yeah, look, the River Rye is right down by my house. I live in Highvale Housing Estate in Leakslip. And, you know, I would have crossed, would have walked down there even on the Wednesday, even before this, walking with my kids. And we were just looking into the river as we do with the fish. And there was nothing obvious then. That was about 5:30 on Wednesday. Then I got the messages, you know, on Twitter, online, in fairness, from the lads there. And late that night, I went down the next morning, which would be yesterday morning, and you could see all the dead fish then down by the Ryvale Nursing Home, right beside my house. So you could see the impact of what had happened. I spoke, obviously, with Kildare County Council a number of times yesterday, yesterday evening. Then I spoke with Joe Boland, the Director of Services of Environment. And obviously what they've taken samples themselves and Inland Fisheries Ireland have taken samples. The samples haven't been returned yet to see what it is. Typically they found a source, which is a surface water pipe between, say, the aqueduct around by the aqueduct and in between that and the nursing home, probably up around River Forest side, potentially. So they found a pipe, but they don't know exactly what was discharged. The feeling is potentially sewage. But at the same time, from what they said, was typically, I wouldn't be an expert in this, but typically it needs to be a really high dose of sewage to cause such damage, which would be unusual. So there is still the fear that there is another pollutant that possibly has caused this. So, as I said, until we get those samples back, we won't necessarily know exactly what it was. But at the same time, we do know the source. Obviously, what caused it and what led to the source, whether it was somebody put something in accidentally into something or did it on purpose, or whether it was how the discharge occurred, we don't necessarily know. But the first thing we need to find out is what exactly was it that caused this damage, because obviously, look, it's hundreds of fish have been damaged in the area. You know, it looked terrible yesterday. I walked by there this morning, actually, walking down. You know, all the fish, a lot of the fish had obviously been washed down. The area had been cleared of it, but you know, you couldn't see any fish in the area too, so it looked quite lifeless, so it was terrible in its own way.
Yeah, well, listen, we will keep an eye on it and follow up on it as well. That's Councillor Joe Neville making those representations to Kildare County Council and the EPA, and Dylan O'Flynn, who brought it to our attention as well. He's a resident in the Selbridge Leakslip area. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us. And as we said, Clem, this is not just a couple of fish in the River Rye. This is hundreds hundreds of fish that have been, you know, washed down and killed here. So a thorough investigation needs to be carried out.
I know you're a keen fly fisherman yourself, and I saw the pictures Joe put up last night, and God, there was some lovely trout in the river as well, but terrible to see those fish floating lifeless down the River Rye. So again, Owen put out the safety message as well, just in case any people are in the area, don't indeed get into that water at the moment until we find out exactly what's happened. That's very useful information that Joe Neville has come up with in regards to that, that they found the source of a surface water pipe, and it seems the sewage has got into the River Rye. It's terrible that this is still happening to our rivers across the country. Now, to change tack, the price of a litre of fuel. Adrian Conlon is the proprietor, managing director, owner of Conlon's Fuel Depot and 24-hour Centra on the Dublin Road in Athy. Very popular with local Athy people, and indeed people passing on the road between Athy and Kilcullen as well. Good morning, Adrian.
Clem, good morning. Just to correct something there, we're not the owners. We're running it on our best behalf, on behalf of AIB, so just to clarify that.
Look, don't mind them, Adrian. Don't mind them in regards to that. You are the main man in front of that store, and will always be the main man in front of that store, and the reason why it's so popular with everybody. Adrian, what's a litre of fuel on your forecourt this morning?
Believe it or not, actually, I haven't seen it, but we were 2.50, and I don't know if there was a change last night. It was 2.15 last night for unleaded and 2.08 for diesel.
Right. So how much of that are you taking?
Well,
as a profit margin, for example, as opposed to, well, I suppose if I put the question, how much is the government taking per litre?
I actually don't know, because I've lost interest in it, being absolutely honest. I don't know what it is, but I do know it's a huge amount for this tax. But I can tell you what we're taking. But probably 70% of your listeners will disbelieve me, but it doesn't matter to me. We're getting 2 cents. That's 2 cents margin on our above our cost price, and then we put VAT onto it. So it comes in costing us X, we put on 2 cents, and then we put the VAT on it, and we come up to €2.159 per litre.
You're telling me that the fuel retailers are getting an average of 2 cents.
Depends. At the moment...
No, I know, but you talk 2 or 3 or 4 cents, whatever else.
Yeah, maximum of 5 cents is what would be in the trade at the moment. Yeah.
Five cents?
Yeah, maximum. Now, that's not bullshit. That's straight up fact.
So if I take the price of 2.15 at the minute in many cases, and if we assume that 5 cents is going to the retailer, in your case it's only 2, the other 2.13 is going to the wholesalers and to the government in taxes.
Yes. Most of it is going to the government. The most of the balance, the bigger share of the balance is going to the government.
You see, I said yesterday on the programme that I felt that the average price of whatever a litre of fuel at the pumps, that people might be under the impression that there was huge profits being taken at the forecourt. You would absolutely disavow that.
I'm going to say something to you, and I can back it up with paperwork. Back in the month of March, there was a major skirmish, and there was major airwaves given to a particular topic as regards what had happened to the price of fuel prior to the government reducing the duty by one particular oil company. So I'm not going to name names, but there was a lot of airtime given to it, and you probably remember on one of the other radio stations, maybe in your own radio stations, but a lot of airtime, and as the public were very unhappy, and rightfully so. After that particular debacle, the following week, that particular company slashed their prices of fuel at the forecourt. We had to try our best